Hi, welcome to the NASCAR on NBC podcast. I'm your host, Nate Ryan, and I'm here with our NASCAR on NBC analyst, Kyle Petty. We're going to talk about the race today at Las Vegas Motor Speedway. For those of you watching the video version of this podcast, you can see that I am not in my normal location in Charlotte. I am in an undisclosed location on the Florida Gulf Coast, south of St. Petersburg, where today's IndyCar season opener happens. So I am going to be relying on Kyle Petty to tell me a lot about, to tell us both a lot about, both me and the listeners, about this NASCAR Cup Series race day at Las Vegas. Kyle, I saw about 5 minutes of this race, I'm going to be totally honest. So I know you watched it. I know William Byron won. Let's just start your general thoughts about what we saw today at Las Vegas.
The Chevys were strong, man. I mean, I was really surprised. I'm going to say this. I think when they dropped the green flag, you know, it was William Byron's race. First segment, second segment, he and Kyle Larson. The Toyotas were better than what I thought they were going to be. I had kind of followed this weekend. I ended up going to Bike Week in Daytona, but I kind of followed and called a couple of people and stayed in touch and seen what was going on. I think the Toyotas kind of struggled, you know, in the short practice qualifying, whatever. And Joey was good. And most of the time, you know, when Joey Logano sets on the pole, that's a sign, man. That's like the old Matt Kenseth syndrome. When he qualifies in the top five or six, he's going to be hard to guard. But watching the race, it was the wind affected the race, you know, and you know, they talked about it today and you hear it so much with these cars, you know, 170, 80 miles an hour wind gust, you know, from 20 to 35 miles an hour. It's like airplane turbulence. Everybody wants to say, oh, it's like driving down the interstate and you pass an 18 wheel. It's not, dude. It's like you're coming in on a jet airliner and you're landing and you get caught in a crosswind and there's a gust of wind. It upsets the car that much. So, it was a basic, for me, it was a typical Las Vegas race. You run it until the last 5 or 10 laps. I think they've had multiple cautions over the years in the last 5 or 10 laps. You get a caution and then it's a different race. You know, if we hadn't had the last caution, Kyle Larson wins the race. And he and William Byron, arguably the two best cars. So it was just a typical race. There was nothing special to me. I'm sorry. I will say that I kind of consider this the first race of the season because it is a mile and a half. It's more in the wheelhouse of what we're going to see all year. So I would take some notes on that and say, okay, this was a pretty decent race for just about every team out there. Had at least one car that ran pretty good.
All right. Yeah, I definitely want to get a little bit deeper into that now that we've got a few races under the Cup Series belt here. We can kind of digest a little bit about what we think we've learned. And I also feel a little bit better that I wasn't the only one who was sort of playing hooky this weekend in Florida, that you got to Bike Week in Daytona. That's great. I of course, was working. I mean, you were probably working too.
I'm not working? What are you talking about?
I was Bike Week before we go back to Vegas. Tell me a little more about what Bike Week's like.
All right, so Bike Week was great. I went down for an event called Sons of Speed that a guy named Billy Lane puts on. Billy Lane's a custom bike builder. And it's vintage motorcycle racing at New Smyrna. Let me tell you, they raced bikes that came off the assembly line for Harley-Davidson in 1909. So when I say vintage bikes, these bikes are 100-plus years old, some of them were. For somebody who loves motorcycles, it would be like going back to Daytona and watching them run Superbirds. It would be like going to the beach and watching them run Hudson Hornets. It was that kind of event. So for me, I was down there working it. I did some broadcasting for it and some streaming for it and stuff. But it was a lot of fun. It's going to be an event that I try to get to every year because I think it's grown. First year they had 10 bikes. This year they had like 62 bikes. They've got big sponsors, Northern Tool and Equipment. I mean, they've got a lot of people that have kind of bought into this over the last 4 or 5 years. So, this is something that was really cool. It was for me.
That is cool. That is cool. I'm glad you got down there and, sorry to make the improper assumption. You're always working. So working something, and, I know you're really enjoying it as well. So that's cool. And I hope to get to Bike Week someday too. Obviously we had the Supercross race on Peacock on Saturday night at Daytona International Speedway. That's one of the crown jewels of the circuit. And I guess sort of like the, maybe one of the signature events of Bike Week, certainly. So Hope I get to see that someday. But as I mentioned, I was in St. Petersburg for the IndyCar season opener. I appreciate your summation. I also got some great notes from our producer, Zach Tanzaretti. So he's prepared me well. But I did see, as I mentioned, some of the race, and I saw the most important part, which of course was, as you mentioned, Kyle, the final restart where it's in overtime and Kyle Larson has the lead when the yellow flies with a few laps to go. He loses the lead in the pits to William Byron. And actually Martin Truex Jr. takes the lead because he stays out while these other cars pit. William Byron wins the race, which is, I guess, good because he had the best car, led the most laps, but it was in doubt again until this final overtime restart. I guess my question for you, Kyle, is, did it surprise you? I know this is an age-old question, especially for somebody who's been around NASCAR his entire life like you, but why don't more guys just stay out when they know there are only two laps to go, provided there's not another overtime finish? Why don't, you know, if there's only two laps left, why didn't more guys stay out like Truex did?
Yeah, I'm always fascinated by that. Okay, I'm running 10th. I'm going to finish 10th. I've got a snowball's chance in hell of finishing 9th. I'm going to finish 10th. Why not stay out? Why not stay out and make them pass you? And listen, I got to give kudos to Truex and those guys for doing it, for staying out. And all it takes is two or three sometimes. All it takes is two or three to just create that havoc at the front. But Truex, you know, when everybody faded, everybody peeled off and Truex was the only one, and he looks in the mirror and he's like, what is this, man? I'm a setting duck. And he was. I thought he did a good job. I thought he did a good job hanging on and kind of being where he was at. But listen, that's the age old question, you know, and I don't understand it. I don't listen, we're in Vegas, gamble. You know what I mean? If any place you can gamble, it's Vegas. But I was fascinated. You know, they talked about two tires, man, two tires. That's a big deal. Two tires wasn't a big deal. That's a no brain call at that point in time. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
If you're going to come down pit road, put two tires on it. I mean, don't just come down pit road and put gas in it or do nothing, you know, do something. But I was with a green white checker with those two laps, you don't have much. So stay out, block, man. Do the most you can.
Why not? I mean, like you said, I mean, Truex hangs on for a seventh place finish, despite the fact that, like you said, I mean, Byron, Larson both took two tires. Some other cars took two tires. But, like, there's 18 cars that finished on the lead lap. So the numbers to me, like, I always thought that you do the opposite of what the leaders are doing if you're, like, in the back half of the lead lap. So, to me, it's like 8 or 9 cars should have stayed out.
Yeah. You know, if you are – listen, if you're 4th, 5th, 6th, 7th, you know, that's a tough call. If you're leading the race, you know you're setting duck, because if you don't come, they're going to come and they're going to come right out behind you. So your hand's about forced. If you're 10th, again, if you're 10th, 11th, 12th, if you're 15th, what do you have to lose, man? What do you have to lose? You got two laps to fall from first back to 15th where you were at. You got two laps to fall from 4th or 5th. Back to 19th or 20th, where you were already at, and you're not going to fall that far. It's just, it's not going to happen. It's just not going to happen that you're going to fall that far. So I'm always fascinated when it comes down to it that these teams don't, and maybe that's why they're just always 15th and 16th place teams, as they don't think far enough ahead sometimes. And I know I'll take criticism for that, but that they don't think far enough ahead to put themselves in a different position. They just do what's safe and what everybody else does.
Yeah, that groupthink that we sometimes see, I think, a lot in NASCAR. But again, like, I think a valid winner in William Byron leads 176 of 271 laps. I was surprised, Kyle, when I looked this up. I mean, I knew that we all talked about it last season that, you know, he had two early wins. And then he went through this dead period through the summer. But William Byron ran pretty well in the playoffs, I thought. I mean, he got to the round of 8. But I was stunned when I looked this up, and this was his first win in 30 starts. Martinsville, April 2022 was the last time that number 24 Chevrolet had been to Victory Lane. So I guess, like, on one hand, it's good for your man, Lord Byron. I mean, he's back on top, you know, class of the field for Hendrick, the best team in NASCAR. But on the other hand, he's kind of been here before, and now they got to prove it during the middle part of the season.
Yeah, I think that's the big deal for this team. Remember when they were finishing in the top 10, like, every week, they had that long stretch, and you thought, man, these guys have hit on something. You know, they don't have to win every week, but they're putting themselves in position every week. And then they just disappeared, man. They just disappeared. And they did come back in the playoffs, and they did have a strong playoffs. And there's been races where William and Rudy both together, when you look at them, and you think, man, they got it going on. They are right there. And then the next week they show up and they're just not. This year, to have started this early and to have started the third race of the year for whatever, and to click and to kind of click and make things work the way they work there, they're going to have to do something. They're going to have to make it work all year long. I'm not going to give them the benefit of the doubt. Listen, I love this team, and I'm a big William Byron fan. Everybody knows that. But I'm not going to give them the benefit of the doubt the end of May, June, July, when there are no shows at the racetrack, and then expect them to come back and turn the switch on again. They've got to be a championship team. They got to perform all year long, and it's going to be interesting to see how they perform as the year goes.
Yeah, and a big win, not just for William Byron, Rudy Fugel, but as I mentioned, Hendrick Motorsports, always talked about as the class of NASCAR. They finished 1-2-3 with William Byron, Kyle Larson, Alex Bowman, and it's their first 1-2-3 finish since Dover in 2021. It's only their third 1-2-3 finish in Hendrick Motorsports history, which surprised me because I figured this team would have a few more 1-2-3s. I mean, I remember one of them was 97 Daytona 500, where Gordon won that one, I think, with Labonte and Craven. And second straight 1-2 finish at Vegas in the March race at Vegas for Hendrick Motorsports. But, of course, you know, the big story come in, Kyle, it's a big moment for Hendrick because they already were the news of the week. The big news of the week, probably the biggest news of the season so far in NASCAR. We learned last Friday that Chase Elliott has suffered a broken leg in a snowboarding accident, was replaced by Josh Berry at this race. He's going to be out indefinitely. We think it's for sure going to be several weeks. What's your initial reaction to Chase Elliott's injury and being out of the Cup Series for a while?
I don't know. And honestly, I don't. And listen, I've listened to so going to bike week and then riding back from bike week, I listen to Sirius Radio a lot and Sirius NASCAR on Sirius. And I am fascinated at the thought process of a lot of fans. I mean, it's just, it blows me away, man. It's like, yeah, he doesn't need to be, don't give him a waiver. He doesn't need to come back and be in the playoffs. That's not fair, man. If you get hurt driving a race car, it's okay to get a waiver. If you get hurt snowboarding, no. You don't get to, you know, and it's just, so what's up, man? I mean, that's crazy. I look at it this way. And listen, you're talking to a guy that my whole career, I rode motorcycles everywhere. Yeah. You know what I mean? And did all this stuff. So you drive a race car and that is your life. You know, I mean, that's what you do, but that's not necessarily your whole life. You know what I mean? You got to be able to step out of that sometimes. And, you know, we praise, God bless the NASCAR fans. We praise Kyle Busch and Kyle Larson and all these guys that go out and race six nights a week and wing sprint cars and go-karts and midgets and whatever they want to race. But, you know, God forbid you can't go snowboarding and get hurt. Now, you just can't do that, people. I don't know where y'all been, but you just can't do that. So I look at it as, yes, he should get a waiver. You know what I mean? Will he come back? How quick will he come back? We don't know the extent of the injury. You know, I had a compound fracture on my left femur. I was out for an extended period of time. His dad broke his leg. He was out for weeks. Darrell Waltrip broke his leg. We know that this is not something that you're going to jump back in the car in the next week and a half. And especially just if we go by the amount of time, a 2 or 3 hour surgery. Obviously, this was a little bit more intense than just, hey, I twisted my ankle. Got to wear a cast for 6 weeks. It's a little bit more intense than that. And so I didn't stay at a Holiday Inn last night, so I don't know his medical condition. So I will say that. But the point is, I don't care how you're hurt or what happens. That's what the medical waiver is for. The medical waiver is for an injury, an illness, a death in the family, whatever it may be, man. That's what it's for. So I look at it more is how will that affect the team? How will that, and you know, we're talking about Rudy and we're talking about talking about William and those guys, Josh, they're not going to just plug Josh in or whoever. Mm-hmm. And they're not going to just, those guys are not going to move the ball forward. Those are placeholders. That's all, mm-hmm. that's all you're there to do. All mm-hmm. Josh is there to do, okay, is get in that car and drive to the best of his ability, not put it in the wall, not put it in a wreck, run as many laps as he can, and keep that nine car in contention point-wise and keep moving it forward, keep moving it forward. That didn't work out for him today, but that's your job as a relief driver. That's just an unstated rule that's your job. Don't go win the race. You don't have to be a hero. Just go do this. So how would the loss of Chase affect these guys moving forward, moving the ball? Now, in this day and time, maybe not as much as we think, because even with a broke leg, you can set in a simulator. Even mm-hmm. with a broke leg, you can go through the data. You can go and you can break down a race and you can begin to move. And maybe this makes this a better team long term, because Chase has the opportunity to just be there mentally and not so much physically. Maybe has an opportunity to lead and guide and put them in a different position later on. So I don't look at all things that happen. There's a story, Chinese farmer. I don't know if you've ever heard it, and I'm not going to tell it here, but it's all about looking at it. It's a story about a Chinese farmer. And the point is, it's all about looking at anything that happens, whether it's tragic, whether it's joyous, doesn't make any difference. You look at it and you say, okay, maybe good, maybe bad. Let's just see how it works out. And that's yeah. kind of the way I look at Chase Elliott. Maybe bad in the moment, but long term, it may not be as bad as what we think it is.
Que sera, sera, somewhat. Yeah. That's probably not what the Chinese farmer said, but like yep. somewhat of the same. The universe does what it does, and we just live in it and deal.
And that's right. And we live in it and we deal, and it's how we react to it. Do yeah. we make this a positive? You know what I mean? Are we just going to be woe is me? You know what I mean? And I probably shouldn't have said that, because Chase is always woe is me. You know what I mean? Because he's hard on himself. So maybe it's not que sera, sera for him. Maybe this yeah. is a bad Eeyore moment for him. But yeah. at the same time, I do believe, you know, if I've got a driver, I know this. At the time I drove, if I had broken my leg and couldn't get in a race car for 6 months, but I had the opportunity to set my butt in a simulator, I would have been in a simulator. I would have been in the sim trying to figure out how to make this car better for Kenny Wallace, who relief drove for us, and Bobby Hill, and for different guys that drove for us, trying to make the team better. And I think Chase is a team player in that organization. I think that's what he'll do.
I should mention, you referenced Josh. That's Josh Berry, who filled in for yeah. Chase Elliott today. I didn't mention that he finishes 29th while Hendrick goes 1-2-3 with Larson, Elliott, Bowman. Of course, totally understandable, given that Josh Berry had never driven a next-gen car before in a cup race. This was his debut at next-gen. So finishing 29th, you know, like you said, he's just trying to, like, move the ball forward, just keep the seat warm. And we learned today that Hendrick's going to have to decide tomorrow on who's racing Phoenix, because they have to put the seat in the car when it goes out to Phoenix. But I want to go back to what you said, Kyle, about how it might be different for drivers today, because we've seen this recently. I mean, 8 years ago, Kyle Busch broke his leg and had a foot problem after that Daytona Xfinity wreck. He missed 3 months and he comes back and wins the championship in 15. I don't know how much sim work maybe played into that, but that's certainly, I think, a yeah. good kind of parallel to what Chase Elliott's probably, I mean, it's, you know, it's pretty much the same generation, even though a different car. Do you think yeah. that maybe bodes well for Chase?
Oh, definitely. Yeah. Because we know how severe Kyle's injuries were. His injuries were to his lower legs and his ankles were bad injuries. Chase's injuries are to his lower leg. Okay. It's not into his foot. It's not into his feet. It's not into multiple bones. At least that's not been the report. It mm-hmm. just seems to be the tibia, I guess, is what they're talking. Now, I don't know how severe that is again, but it seems to be a little bit more concentrated in one area than what Kyle Busch's were. So I do think it bodes well for Chase Elliott to miss X number of races and be able to come back and get in that car and be able to go out. And listen, and we know he can go and win races, just like we knew Kyle Busch could. We're not talking about, and I'm not, this is not a criticism on any other team, but we're not talking about a Michael McDowell. We're not talking about an Eric Jones. We're not talking about some of these teams that can win races and have won races, but they're specific races. They don't contend week in and week out. We're talking about a Hendrick car and a driver that wins week in or can contend week in and week out. And even if you only give him six shots at winning a race, he's got a shot at all six of those, not like some other teams that just have a shot at one.
I understand what you're saying, too, about the waiver. And I totally think, you know, five-time most popular driver, they've given a waiver to virtually everyone who's ever applied for a waiver. I fully expect that they're going to grant this request from Hendrick Motorsports for a waiver. And I'm with you. Like, I don't want to come off like Joe Fan on SiriusXM NASCAR radio saying that these guys should be told what to do with every minute of their lives because they make millions of dollars driving a cup car. But I am curious, Kyle, what you think. This is what struck me about the Chase Elliott news. So this injury happens Friday morning, and it happens in Colorado, several hundred miles away from where Chase Elliott is practicing and qualifying a cup car the next day at Las Vegas Motor Speedway. So do you have any issue at all with the optics of that? Like, I know that these guys should be allowed to live their lives. They're professional athletes and they have a lot of people depending on them. But on the other hand, they need the stress relief. They need to figure out how to maintain that mental, physical health balance. But the fact that he's doing this, and then we know he's flying like that night again, all the way to Vegas to do his primary job. Is there anything about that that might make you turn your head?
Nah.
No, it's all good.
There's just, listen. And I know, let me say this to you, Nate. Optics. And that's a great point. That's a great point. The optics may not be good. What I mean? I completely understand what you're saying. But at the same time, you know, it's Kyle Petty. And let's just put me. So Kyle Petty races at California Motor Speedway. And, you know, you do this, you do that, whatever. And I'm riding my motorcycle to the racetrack and I hit a slick spot and I go down and I break my leg. What the heck?
Yeah.
You know, that's what I do. I ride motorcycles. Tony Stewart, in between California and Phoenix, Tony's out in the desert. Running the one of his dune buggies or something, and he rolls it over and hurts his back or whatever. You know, my point is this. It could have happened on Monday. Mm-hmm. It could have happened on Tuesday. It just so happened to happen on Friday. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And that's where the optics. I agree with you. I agree totally. But it could have happened any day. It could have happened any day along that week. Did you expect him? And do we as race fans expect him to get back in his cocoon and go over to Vegas and just sit in a hotel room and don't do anything because I don't want you to get hurt. You know what I mean? I don't want you to get hurt. So you can't do it that way either. And again, would the optics be the same? Would we be having the same conversation if Kyle Larson had flown to Northern California and run a sprint car race and flipped it on Friday night, knowing he had to be in Vegas on Saturday to qualify his car? Would we be saying the same thing? And according to Sirius Radio, race fans would say, thumbs up, dude. That's good. You know what I mean? We love Kyle Larson. But it's different because it's snowboarding. It's different because of some of this other stuff. So it's a perception. You know what I mean? Yeah. The perception is, you know, is snowboarding versus being in a race car when you get hurt. So I don't have a problem with it.
You make a great point, too. Like with Larson, I mean, Rick Hendrick didn't let any of his drivers do anything, you know, after Casey Kane like barrel rolled an outlaw's car or whatever in 2012, Rick Hendrick said no more until 2 years ago when Larson joins the team and Rick Hendrick says, maybe I'll let you run dirt cars. Larson runs dirt cars to his heart's content, wins 10 races in 2021, wins the championship. And the narrative the last 2 years has suddenly been Rick Hendrick's good with anything. You know, William Byron's out running late models. Alex Bowman's running the Chili Bowl. Chase Elliott's running dirt cars and sports cars. So it's kind of funny. Like, that's another layer to this, that like Hendrick had sort of been on the other end of the spectrum and then came over here and everything had been going well. But now this happens. And I wonder what Rick's reaction was, I guess, to all of that.
Yeah. That's the question. You know, how did Rick react to it? But you don't want it. Listen, golly, man, I don't even know. I'll tell you this. My dad, 1 year, we were out motorcycle riding when I was a kid and he broke his thumb. He fell and hurt his leg that time. They're playing football in the front yard during lunch before the Daytona 500, and he breaks his thumb. You know what I mean? And has a cast on it, you know, and they cut
it. I didn't know this story. This is right before the Daytona 500. He broke his thumb.
Daytona 1 year. Yeah, they're playing football out front and they break their thumb. But the thing is, so it's like, oh my gosh, you shouldn't have been playing football.
Yeah.
They just played football. That's what they did during lunch. You know what I mean? That was just like a standard thing. I don't know how to tell you that. So the thing is, it's almost an oxymoron to say that we're going to let you go out on Sundays and do the most dangerous thing in the world. But the rest of the week, we want you to do needlepoint. Okay. Don't do anything but cross stitch and needlepoint, and nothing that puts you in danger. I mean, that's not who race car drivers are. So, I'm just fascinated by the way the world sees this story. You know what mm-hmm. I mean? And I can understand it. I do understand it. Don't get me wrong. Mm-hmm. I do understand it, but it's just a non-story to me. He got hurt doing something that he loves to do. He grew up snowboarding. He grew up skiing. Bill Elliott loves it. His mom loves it. That's just what they did. It's just what happened, man.
You think it's the perfect storm of 5-time most popular driver, Chase Elliott, snowboarding, like you said, Hendrick Motorsports, best team in NASCAR. Like, is it just kind of all those things make it everything. A bigger story?
It is. Yeah. And that's what I'm saying. It is. It's everything, and that's what has created the optic, okay?
Yeah.
Because, listen, and again, this is not a slam at anybody, but we would not be having this conversation over VJ McLeod. We would not be having this conversation over Corey LaJoie. You know what I mean?
Sure.
We would, and nobody would be saying, yeah, that guy shouldn't get a waiver. Yeah, that guy, you know what I mean? You just wouldn't be having this conversation. I'm not sure we would be having this conversation if Ross, I didn't just fall off a watermelon truck. If Ross Chastain fell off a watermelon truck, I'm not sure would we be having the same conversation? You know what I mean? I think it's just Chase Elliott, Hendrick Motorsports, the expectations, most popular driver, so much there. Though everything feeds into it. You know, to make this story what it is. I mean, listen, I listened to Sirius Radio on the way down the road on Friday, and I didn't even know they were racing in Vegas. I thought everybody was camped outside a hospital somewhere in Colorado because that's what it sounded like according to everything. That was the story on Friday.
Make me wish I would have, like, rode a motorcycle with you to Bike Week so I could just listen to Sirius XM for 4 or 5 straight hours. Well, you mentioned Corey LaJoie's name, and I think you're right. Like, if it was him or another driver, we probably would not be talking about this. But Corey LaJoie was somebody we were talking about after this race because he has now started the season with 3 straight top 20s. Daniel Suarez had a top 10 again. He's got top 10 in all 3 races this season. Actually, you know, something that Ross Chastain, who again ran at the front today, his teammate, his trackhouse teammate, can't claim because he fell back on that final restart. You know, it seems like you mentioned it, Kyle, like Chevys, Toyotas ran pretty well, but they're only 2 Fords in the top 10. And Joey Logano starts on the pole and ends up smacking the wall, has a bad day, says he was terrible even though he qualified first. You said that you feel like this is the first race of the season. There's a lot of things there to digest. I know that you love when we all overanalyze and jump the gun. And now we know who's going to win the championship, you know, 8 months from now. But what do you think are some of the big takeaways from this race and through 3 races in 2023?
So for me, let's take Hendrick. And we look at Hendrick and I say, those guys are on track. Take Mr. Snowboard King out of it here. But these guys are on track. The team is on track. They have run up front. They've done what they needed to do in the last 2 races. But we get to this race and they have 3 incredibly competitive cars. These racetracks fit their drivers. So let's say that at the same time. I look at Trackhouse, and the whole time that Ross was running 3rd or 4th, Daniel was running 13th, 14th, 15th. He was right there. Just speed-wise, if you watched it on the computer, they were pretty close, just didn't have that track position. So I look at that team, and I'm like, those 2 guys are solid. I look at the Fords. And I look at Penske, and I look at Joey and Ryan Blaney. And, you know, for me, and I'm going to be honest, man, Ryan Blaney is the new Casey Kane, potential unfulfilled. You know what I mean? Yeah. Everybody wants to talk about what he can do, but he never does anything. You know what I mean? For whatever reason, he just never gets past that hump. As I look at it, and Cindric, he brings a lot to the table. but he's really not showed up since Daytona last year, you know, in a lot of ways. And they, he's got to get in the mix. So that's a Ford team that I worry, that I'm worried about. I look at it and I'm worried about it. They shouldn't have missed Vegas that much. I've seen Joey Logano win that race, as we had the conversation earlier, by not taking tires and putting himself in a position just to take control of the race for the last four or five laps and outdrive people. So I know Joey Logano can get it done. He just doesn't have the equipment to get it done right now. I look at Kevin. I look at that team, at Stuart Haas. The Fords just aren't getting it done at California or here. So that's a little bit of a concern to me. Toyotas don't seem to have that qualifying kind of speed. But by God, they're race car drivers, and they've got race teams. Denny Hamlin, Truex, again, gets up there, gets in the mix. Bubba Wallace is in the mix. I'm a little surprised that Tyler Reddick hadn't shown me something in these first few races, because I really expected him to set the woods on fire. And then internally in a couple of these teams, I look at everything that Kyle Busch has done at RCR and everything that Austin Dillon has not done at RCR. You know, as you look at that, two ends of the spectrum. So we've got teams that have that going on internally too, as you look at it. And then you look at Corey LaJoie, who just hammers it out, head down, blue collar, make it happen, get it done with a team that probably shouldn't be running the way it is, but he's having solid finishes. And it's because of him. He's driving incredibly smart. He's not putting himself in bad positions. He's not taking an 18th or 19th place car trying to run in the top five with it and going home on the record. He's doing what the most that he can do and getting the most out of that car. So when I look at it, I'm still not sure where the year is going to go or how it's going to play out. But I think we're seeing the same players early in the year, meaning the Chevy drivers, the Hendrick drivers, the Trackhouse drivers. Those guys have not checked up from where they're at. And the Gibbs guys, they're where they need to be. You know, I think that Denny and especially Martin, that those two teams have been pretty good. Christopher Bale, he ends up fifth. He didn't run that well, but he ends up fifth today. But he's had a pretty good year, and he had a pretty good second half of last year. The jury's out on Ty Gibbs, but it's out on anybody that's a rookie. I don't expect a lot from that. But I think as you go into it, nothing's really surprised me. Nothing's really changed that so far in these first. Phoenix will be another test to come to that mile track and see, because we know Kevin Harvick, that's been a place that he's on. We know Chase Briscoe, that's been a place that he gets around. So let's see how the Fords do when we get to a mile track.
It's going to be a big test for them. And, you know, as I look at the results, like, I'm somewhat surprised. Like, Austin Cindric actually was the highest finishing Ford today in sixth, but I think that was kind of the result of the jumble on the final restart. Yeah. That final restart really kind of turned things around, where a lot of guys maybe finished better than they ran or finished worse than they ran. So it's kind of hard to judge completely because of that green, white, checkered finish. But I do think it's interesting, Kyle, that you have Kevin Harvick finishing ninth, all of his Stewart Haas teammates finishing outside the top 15. And I don't know if it's like panic button time yet for Stewart Haas, because it seems like they've had some moments. But I mean, Chase Briscoe was terrible at Fontana and said after the race they couldn't figure out why. Ryan Preece clearly has not gotten off to the start he wanted. I think he's been a crash in each of the first three races that he's been in that 41 Cup car for Stewart Haas Racing. You know, again, it's Harvick's final season. Like you said, traditionally, he's been good at Phoenix. Phoenix is a huge marker because of the championship race. What do you make of what's going on with SHR, and how do they kind of turn things around? Like, knowing that, like, it's not just Harvick's final season, but I don't know. It just feels like that team to me is like maybe the biggest question mark right now in Cup.
Yeah. So look, this is, man, why do you ask me these questions? So they turned.
Because I love your answers.
When Kevin won what, nine races that year, which was
in 2020? Yeah.
2020. Okay. Yeah. They turned it around in 2020, and they've been going in the wrong direction ever since. Okay. That's when they turned it around. They were at a place where I really thought, man, the sky's the limit. These guys can get it done. And I know I'm hard on people, and I'm sorry. Okay. But Kevin Harvick can't carry the ball every play. Every play, he can't carry the ball. You know, you just run your back in the ground, giving it to him. And that's all they've expected from Kevin and Rodney. And they've run the ball in the ground. They've run the team in the ground because Kevin just can't do it. You know, it's not that he doesn't have the ability, but he can't move four teams forward. He needs to worry about his team and moving his team forward. You got one driver, Eric, who has just been constant his entire career. And that's not a knock. Listen, a lot of us were that way. We never got to that place, but he's just been a constant. But you know what you have with Eric. You know what I mean? Yeah. You know what you have. I think the deal with Chase is Briscoe will give you a phenomenal week, and then he disappears for two or three weeks. And then he'll give you a phenomenal week. Is that Chase or is that the team? And then I think Ryan Preece, I think he's a wild card. You know, I just don't know. I know what he's done. I know what he's done in the past and Xfinity cars and other things. But that was basically, I think, from Cole Custer to Ryan Preece as a lateral move. They didn't do anything. They just took one driver out and put another driver in, and it's the same. None of those three drivers, sorry, they can't help Kevin. They're not helping Kevin Harvick. They don't appear from the outside to be pushing Kevin Harvick, to be making Kevin Harvick or helping him move the team forward. And I think that's a problem. You know, we see it. We in American motorsports, we're just wimps in a lot of ways. I'm going to compare it to Formula One, where Formula One teammates hate each other. Okay. And they hate each other for a reason. Yeah. Okay. They hate each other because they want to be the best one on that team. They want to be the best on that team. And they force each other to get better. That's what it's all about, man. I mean, the annals of Formula One are littered with teammates that, you know, should have gone to prison for the amount of hate they had in for each other. You know what I'm saying? And the thing is, it's like you go to Stuart Haas and everybody walks through the door. Yeah, Kevin's the best. Yeah, I'm with you. You know what I mean? And you just concede the fact. So you're not helping Kevin by that. You've got to have that attitude that, hey, dude, I can kick your butt six ways from Sunday. Maybe not every week, but I'm going to force you to be on your game. Nobody's forcing those guys to be on their game, so their game's off. And I think that's what Rick has and what Hendrick has with the drivers that he has. They're not all on the game every week, but he'll have two up front that are pointing, forcing each other to do something. And that third guy that's running ninth and that fourth guy that's running 15th is looking at the scoreboard saying, that's my teammate. I got to get better. And they come back next week. So you get that. You get that cycle. You get that at Penske. I think you always got it at Penske when you had Brad and Joey together. I'm not sure how much these guys push Joey, but I don't think Joey's a driver that needs to be pushed. I think he pushes himself mentally. But I think you need that in a team. And I think, listen, I'm hoping that we see this with Kyle Busch and Austin Dillon, because I think that Austin Dillon, people have always looked at it, and I think wrongly, I'm going to say this, wrongly, and said, that's his granddad's team. He's going to have a job no matter what. I think Austin wanted Kyle, and I think Kyle will push Austin to be a better race car driver. And they've just started in a different place right now, but I think they'll get on track. And I think Austin will be a better race car driver because of Kyle, because he'll drive Austin to be better. But the Stuart Haas thing has amazed me over the last few years. Other than Kevin Harvick, there's not a bright spot over there. And I'm sorry to say that. I just don't see a bright spot over there.
No, that's fair. That's well said. And you put out some incredible thoughts there about driver dynamics and the balance between, especially four teammates and Hendrick, but also, like you said, Logano, Harvick, all of these things are very fascinating to me and would be good fodder for another podcast. I do have another Harvick question, but I'm not going to put you on the spot again and ask you who's going to take his place when the inevitable now we know is going to happen at the end of the season, because again, that's why I think Stuart Haas Racing is such a big question mark, but I don't want to get you any more trouble than you already are, KP. So we're going to wrap this up. Thanks so much for watching the race and enlightening me and all of the listeners as always, and always appreciate having you on the NASCAR on NBC podcast. Thanks for being here, man.
Thanks for having me, man. I appreciate it.
We appreciate Kyle Petty for joining us on the NASCAR on NBC podcast. Thanks to Motorsports Manager Emily Convoy for coordinating and recording this episode with KP. And thanks as well to producer Zach Catanzaretti for providing some notes after I spent the entire day watching, covering, and reporting from the Grand Prix of St. Petersburg for NBCSports.com Motorsports Talk.
That's not a humble brag on my part. I really watched maybe 5 to 10 minutes total of the Cup race at Las Vegas because of my other NBCSports.com obligations. Again, on Motorsports Talk. So I really appreciate Zach and Emily helping back me up on this. And thanks to both of them and KP for taping this episode at a special time Sunday night. We don't usually have this podcast out by early Monday morning, but because of a lot of circumstances that I won't bore you with, but they involve everything from travel schedules to jury duty, we had to tape this Sunday night, and I really appreciate everyone's flexibility. As always, you can find more news, columns, and analysis on NASCAR Talk and Motorsports Talk on NBCSports.com. Please visit NBCSports.com/NASCAR or NBCSports.com/Motors. If you have any NASCAR and NBC podcast feedback, you can send to me on Twitter. @NateRyan is my handle. Thanks again for listening to the NASCAR and NBC podcast.